Hi, my name is Allie Trang, and I'm 16 years old. Today is June 9th, and I'm speaking with my father. His name is Chris Trang, and we're recording in San Diego, California. So, to start off, when were you born and where?
I was born in Vietnam, in a city in the coast called Vung Tau. I was born in 1973, October 21st.
And where's your family originally from? Because I know they're not from Vietnam.
Okay. Yeah, my great-grandfather came from China, near Hong Kong, I think in the province of Guangzhou. And they left China to Vietnam to find a better life, better future. Because China, there was they always have decades of famine. That's where basically there's no food. There's hardly not much work because China is so overpopulated. And so they left China for a better future. And so they went to Vietnam, the southern part of Vietnam.
So for the next question, describe your family living in before the move. So like how many people were you living with and your situation?
In my family, I have 5 older brother and 2 older sister. And so when I was living in Vietnam, I didn't remember much because I was only a 7-year-old, but I did remember a glimpse of stuff that happened that I still remember to this day. It was one of my best friend got ran over by a car, and I remember playing in the street, playing stick game in the street, and always walking around with my friends around the neighborhood and causing trouble.
So you lived in Vietnam for about like 7 years?
Yes.
And you left when you were around 7?
Yes.
And how did the Vietnam War affect you and your family at the time?
From what I know from talking to my brothers and parents is that before the war ended in 1975, my family has a business. We were kind of well off. From what I heard is that we had maids and chauffeurs and my brother and sister were going to private schools, and we were successful. We had a farm and a general store where we sell like flowers and other rice. Kind of similar to like a supermarket. And so, but when I was born, I guess in 73, the Vietnam War ended in 1975, so I don't remember much of the good life. All I know is that, we were not well off when I was 7-year-old.
So you would say the war urged you guys to immigrate or communism?
Yeah, the reason we escaped from Vietnam was to have freedom, because the communists, they didn't let you have that much freedom. You can't say what you want. You can't go where you want. You can't do whatever you want. There's basically no freedom, and there's no capitalism. You can't just start a business and make money like that. It doesn't work that way. You are limited to what you can sell. Yeah. And because of communists took over, there was limited on what we can buy and what we can get. And at that time, there was a lot of poverty. Yeah. And so we left because of political freedoms and financial freedom.
So your move to America, what was that like? I know you guys were on a boat.
It wasn't a move. We had to escape from Vietnam.
Escape.
Because you can't just leave the country if you want it. We had to escape. And so this was, I believe this was the beginning of November in 1980. We escaped on a boat, and the boat was dark, we escaped basically behind our farm. We had a farm where from the main street all the way to the back is the ocean. And so we escaped from the ocean, I mean, on a boat behind our farm. And there was many people on a really small boat. There was like 40, over 40, I believe, over 40 people on a boat escaping from Vietnam. And we had to like cramped in, sitting in that boat for 4 days and four nights. And we got through many storms, I mean, big storms.
In the ocean?
The oceans. And there was a lot of people, even my brother and sister, thought we would not survive the trip because the boat was so small and it was so cramped up, and we had water constantly coming in, and where we had to like scoop up the water and dump it out of the boat. And so we were pretty much fortunate that we survived the trip. It was 4 days and four nights.
So you came over here with your entire family, or was it?
No, I came over with two older sister and two older brother and my father. And my mom and brother, other brothers, were still back in Vietnam. Yeah. And actually, I had two older brother that left, that escaped before us.
Mm.
And so on the trip, the route we took was we went to Indonesia. The island was called Galang, and that was the refugee camp that was in Galang. I mean, in Indonesia.
So what was the like split with your family? Like, do you remember much of it?
Why the split, or?
Or like, what was it like to split up and then try to come here?
The reason a lot of time we split up a family to escape is that the unfortunate part of you know, escaping is a lot of time you escape in a boat, a lot of people die. We had neighbors in our town where the family, multiple family, escaped multiple trips, and most of them, I mean, and they all die. So it was a high chance
of death
escaping on a boat, because a lot of time the boat would sink or people would starve. Stranded on the ocean, starved to death. And so there was many deaths during that time. So, and so that was one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. So we had some brother
you
left.
You broke it up.
And so like, fortunately, everybody survived the escape.
So that's very rare for this escape, right?
I mean,
and so on the boat, what was it like eating?
So what happened on the boat... because of the bad weather, salt water would got onto the boat, and so all our food was soaked in salt water. Mm-hmm. And so we had to throw away the food, because if you eat salt food that is really salty, you're gonna be more thirsty. And the way if you know the first thing you die is from thirst. And so starvation, you can live for weeks. A few weeks, 2-3 weeks without eating, but you need water. So all the food was thrown away, and because of the bad weather, we lost some water, tank of water, that was on the boat. And so so we went 4 days and four nights, no food, just only water.
Wow.
And each day we were limited to. A capsule of water, limited to I believe 2 or 3 capsule of water. I would say this would be probably 8 ounce of water. I don't know. It's very little each day, because we were worried we might be stranded out in the ocean for a while, and so we were limited to how much water we can drink.
So you said you didn't know how long like you would be out there. Like when you left, did the adults know like how long the trip would be?
No, because a lot of time when you're in the ocean, the currents can take you far away off your course. And so you don't know where the current where the open takes you. The only thing is they had a compass that was that direction was heading to Indonesia. Unfortunately, we had a really good captain that drove the boat exactly where we wanted. And so we got there in 4 days and four nights, where we heard story of people stranded for weeks and months and a lot of death.
So do you think your neighbors that like went on a boat, tried to escape through boat, who died before, didn't have such a good captain, which is why? Or they got stranded or something like that?
A lot of time is, you know, your engine die, you're stranded out there, or bad weather, and your boat sinks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of time is people, when you escape, you want to go during the season where there's not that many communist boat out there. You're basically looking for people to escape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to, so you tend sometimes to go during the monsoon season where there's nobody will be, you know, smart enough to escape at that time, because the weather is dangerous. So a lot of time, so we went in November, so that time the weather was bad.
Oh.
And fortunately, yeah, we had a really good captain that steered the boat.
So you said 4 days, four nights to Indonesia?
Yeah.
And then how did you get to America from there?
From Indonesia, we stayed in a refugee camp.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start over. When we got in Indonesia, we got to one of the small islands, and we saw one of the fishermen. They helped us. They got for us more drinking water. They got us coconut water from a coconut tree, and that's to basically at that time we were so thirsty. Everybody was had a very limited water, and so they gave us coconut. And then from there, they took us to another island, where more people were populated. And on this island, it was mainly Chinese. And the fortunate part was my father speaks Chinese to them, and so communicate about the situations and what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we stay, I believe, for a day or two. And from then, they took us to another island. And,
Through
a boat. Mm-hmm. And the second island was called Kuku. This island where it was a small refugee camp. We stayed there for I believe a week, and from then they took us to the main refugee camp. It's called Galang in Indonesia. This is where thousands of refugees were at, and from there we stayed there, and all the from there we got sponsored by my older brother, who came to the U.S. like a year or 4 or 5 months before us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and they were in San Diego, and so they sponsored us over, but we had to stay in the refugee camp for around 6 months.
Oh.
6 months. And so we got over here May of 1981. May of 1981.
So a couple months later.
Yeah.
So we left
November 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to San Diego in May. Right? Yeah. May 1981.
So how did your brother find out like you guys were in Indonesia? And like, how did he sponsor you? Like, did you have to get in contact with him? Or
I'm not sure how it works, but I think because we say we had we were informed
mm-hmm.
from my mom in Vietnam that a brother was in the U.S. and they gave us the name and the location. I think that's how it works.
Mm.
I wasn't sure. And yeah, we never discussed that. But I think, yeah, we got information back to Vietnam that we were alive, and we were in the refugee camp, and I think from there we got information from Vietnam that a brother was in the U.S. and where and then the location.
Yeah.
And from then, that's how I think the U.S. embassy contacted my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's how it works.
Okay. And so, as well, you probably don't know as much of it, but your family was pretty well off in China, or not China, in Vietnam. So, coming to America and then basically starting from nothing, how was it for you guys? And how was it as a young kid? What did, like, the family dynamic seem like?
Okay. Well, what happened is starting up from top of my father, I mean, which is your grandfather, Gong. So when he came over, he was 50-something. And so when he came over, he was, for him, he was depressed. He was he was happy for dad and the brother and sister because, you know, we have young, we had opportunity to, you know, create our own future. But for him, it was very difficult for him to learn the language. And it was difficult for him in a sense. He lost everything. Everything he built, since he was a young kid, he was really a studious, smart person, and so he was always top of his class in school, and then so when he created a business that in our town we were considered a wealthy family, because we had cars, chauffeur, maids. And they, my brother and sister went to private school, and we were well off, and so well off where my your grandfather Gong, he would get together with his friend and build temples and give charities to the needies, and so he was one of the townsmen, I mean, our area of the city, in that city. And so for him, it was very difficult for him. He was depressed when he came over because of his age and what he lost. And so he became an alcoholic. And but through the year, I mean, at the beginning, it was tough for us. I mean, for me, going to school, it was very difficult learning the language.
Yeah, the language barrier.
Yeah, and I had a lot of problems. And I got into a lot of trouble. And definitely, we experienced a lot of discrimination against the Caucasian American.
Yeah.
And also with the blacks and the Hispanics. And so in our area, it's like a melting pot. All sorts of ethnicity was there. We got the Laotian, the Cambodians, the Hispanics, the blacks, the whites. And so there was always a lot of issues between the races.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough and it was hard. And for my brother, they excel. They just concentrate on education and not worry about the other stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think immigration has shaped your life?
Immigration has
coming over here, experiencing what you had to go through to get to where you are now. How has that been a big factor in your life?
Has been well worth it in a sense. All my brothers and sisters and my family came over safely, and we thrive since we came here through education, and everybody works and everybody's successful, and all my brothers and sisters, you know, they have families, and all the kids are doing really good, and so we're super happy. And here we have the political freedom that we strive for, and also the financial freedom that we wanted. And so overall, we are well off from what we were when we were in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we had no political freedom, no financial freedom, basically no future at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you've mentioned to me before that you want to move back to Vietnam after all your kids go to college.
Uh-huh.
So what is that, like, what do you miss about Vietnam? Even though you were kind of young when you left.
But. Oh, Well, the reason I want to go back to Vietnam is just financially, it's just a lot cheaper to live over in Vietnam than to live here. And for example, a rent of a room costs only $200-$300. Where over here, it costs over $1,000. And the food costs, everything is much cheaper. And everybody there is, you know, are Asian. There's less discrimination, yeah. Especially this past 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you can see all the white Americans, even the blacks are discriminating against Asian because of the COVID-19 virus.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of hate that's going on in the U.S. And so I was thinking of maybe going back to Vietnam to live because it's cheaper and
the social life Asian would be better.
And the social life would be better. Mm-hmm. And now Vietnam's changing. They still consider themselves communism, but it's still right now it's more capitalism than communism.
Yeah. So
now everybody has a freedom to work and do what they want. Mm. Just do not talk bad about the government, and you'll be fine. Just don't talk anything bad about the officials and the government. You should be fine, hopefully.
And so we talked about your past and the history of our family, and now let's talk about what's going on right now in the world. So the global pandemic, COVID, has changed the entire world in the past year. And what have you seen? Because I know you keep up with stocks and the economy. What have you seen and learned from it? Where do you think we're going from here? In terms of that,
well, for me, for mm-hmm. us, I think the COVID was besides all the tragedy of so many people dying because of it, millions of people dying. But what it did for our family was that it caused us to slow down, stop, because before the COVID, life was
very chaotic.
With us constantly driving around, everybody's doing sports and everything, and just everybody's just busy and mm-hmm. haven't really slowed down and value what we have. And because of COVID, we just stay in the house and we get to know each other and mm-hmm. understand each other and realize that we don't know much. I mean, we've been just past 15, 20 years just running around
mm-hmm.
and not, valuing each other.
I feel in terms of that, it's helped us be closer to our extended family, cousins and aunts.
Uh-huh.
I feel we've been seeing them a lot more. So in a way, we slowed down, but it sped up every other relationship in our life. And so
I agree.
What do you think the recovery process will be after COVID for our family, society, the world? What do you think? We're already starting it, so how do you think it's gonna affect us permanently?
I think definitely from now on, I think when we go back to normal, everybody, more people, the hygienes
mm-hmm.
Will probably be different. We are now less likely to meet people and shake hands
mm-hmm.
and we'll definitely will more going out in public, see more people wearing masks.
Yeah, and I think that'll stay for a couple years after this.
Yeah, and so, and just talking to people, we'll tend to we won't be standing closer to people while we talk than before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more and more people will probably be working remotely instead of coming to work and work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also education, there maybe more chance of student working, attending class remotely instead of in class.
I think it's made us realize that a lot of the things we went in to do for school or work, we could do it at home. And I feel after this, you can't really take away that option for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so have you ever seen the world in this state before, anything close to it? Has anything ever been this for you?
No, but as I told you earlier, but from escaping from them, that's another dramatic thing that happened. But from this pandemic where it happened to everybody in the world, it's scary.
Yeah.
But definitely we need to be more prepared for the future.
Do you think COVID has brought out the worst or the best in people after this year?
I think COVID, I don't know if it's COVID or Trump, the President Trump brought everybody out, but the last 4 or 5 years has been just seeing how, Americans
mm-hmm.
treat each other is just horrible. And I don't know if it's because of Trump or is it because of COVID,
mm-hmm.
but I never seen so much hate towards Asian this past few years.
Definitely. And so I know you're into the stocks and like the economy, and I don't really know too much about it. So what are some changes that you saw during the pandemic that happened in those areas?
Well, I think the biggest thing was that now anything that's in tech that you can do over the computer,
mm-hmm.
that has accelerated faster than before. I mean, more and more people are doing everything online.
Yeah.
You know, than
because
before.
Of COVID. Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, that I think that would be good. I mean, that might be good for the environment. Less people running around buying stuff in a store, you know, that might be good for the environment. But then again, it might be bad too, because now everything is coming in boxes
mm-hmm.
and delivered to your house boxes.
Yeah.
So that might be bad too.
So what do you feel like your biggest life lesson at this moment, after going through like everything you've been through at this point?
The life lessons is life is very unpredictable.
Mm.
Well, what you can control is how much effort you put into what you do, and believe that, you know, life is good. Believe that people are good, and try the best that you can, but don't always, you know, think you're gonna be perfect at everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just set your sight, not too high, but give all your effort the best that you can, but don't dream for the world because you might be disappointed.
Yeah.
It's better to have low expectation than high expectation, because
mm-hmm.
low expectation you can always meet and beat, you know, and if you live a life where you don't have too high of expectation, you might be more happy. Because
mm-hmm.
if your high expectation is too high, if you don't get it, you'll be disappointed. But the important part is that work hard and try the best that you can. If
mm-hmm.
you don't get it, it's okay. It's, remember, you work hard and you try your best.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like I'm kind of going backwards on the question, but a little bit back to COVID. When you first started seeing like the headlines about it around early March, that like we might be going into like a 2-week
mm-hmm.
quarantine period, what was your first like thoughts? Like, would you think this would have extended to the year it has been now?
Yeah, I thought it would be over in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, at that time, when the cases start growing, I was like, I thought maybe I had COVID already, because, you know, a few months before the shutdown, I got sick, and I never experienced that type of sickness before. I had, you know, aching back, my body was aching, so I thought that was one of the symptoms for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, it was no big deal. It was kind of like a flu, you know, and I thought I had it already, and so I was going out. I wasn't afraid of it, and until a week before Thanksgiving in 2020, I went and hang out with my friend, and I got COVID, and it was horrible. I had a temperature for like 5 days, and when I went to get a COVID test, it came back invalid. And so I had to take a second COVID test. So it took me 5-6 days to get a result that I had COVID.
Yeah.
And from that time, I wasn't feeling that well. And the worst part was I got you and your mom and your brother sick. And
yeah.
I felt horrible. It was one of the worst week or two of my life. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you notice any like still occurring like symptoms from it, or like after the fact? Like, do you notice anything?
No. After I had it, I wasn't able to run at all
because
my lung was had issues. I had shortness of breath, and I couldn't run. I couldn't jog.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me over a month
to
get back to normal, where I was able to run for a couple miles without stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and another problem, was that I felt weak.
Mm-hmm.
About
a week ago, I went to track practice and like my chest was hurting the entire time. I was like running with one of my friends who also got COVID, and like both of us, like we couldn't do it. It was like really bad.
Yeah. I think you had to slowly build yourself work into it.
Yeah, it's been like 6 months. I didn't realize the recovery would be this long.
Oh, wow.
All right.
Or is it you're out of shape?
All right. That's it for the interview. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, I'm glad.